So, maybe we will do some of that. I don't know. Okay, so this weekend we're going to be in the book of Ruth. We're going to be actually deep down in the book of Ruth. But I'm not going to be teaching on Ruth per se. This is going to be more about how do you take Old Testament stories and apply them to our lives today. Okay? So there are many wonderful things I learned when I got to go to seminary, but the one I am probably more thankful for than any is feeling like I have some sort of idea how to apply the Old Testament as a Christian. And I'm so thankful for that. So as Kathy and I were talking, I said, what if I just like share those tools with women? And she said, that sounds great. So my hope is that by the time you walk out of here Sunday, you will have a feeling, you'll have some confidence that like, I have some idea how to take an Old Testament story and apply it to my life. Okay? I will say this is stories in particular. It's not, you know, apocalyptic literature and wisdom literature and prophecy and all that. So it's just the stories of the Old Testament, which is a lot of the Old Testament. And I would say, I don't know how you feel, the idea of applying somebody else's story to my life is kind of weird, right? So if I say to you, Louise was a good student, and when she turned 16, her parents bought her a car. Apply that to your life. Like, how in the world do you do, like, I'm not Louise. Can you think of any way you could apply that to your life? Be a good student, okay? Get yourself adopted by Louise's parents. Right, there's just only so much you can do trying to apply somebody else's story. And in general, when we feel like, okay, well, here are stories in the Old Testament. See, the whole Bible applies, so somehow I'm supposed to be able to apply these. What we resort to is there must be some example I should follow. Or something I should avoid, like there's got to be some sort of command in here somewhere, I guess. And sometimes that works and sometimes it doesn't work, but it's not the point. So what we're going to do this weekend is figure out, okay, what is the point? And before we do that, okay, I need two volunteers. Anybody who can write legibly, which rules me completely out, write legibly and relatively fast. Do I have anybody? Okay. Two, good. If you could come up here and somewhere, yep, I have markers. Okay, so you each get one of these easels, and you each get a marker. There we go. Pick your easel. There we go. Big enough that they can read it, but there might be three or four things. So, okay, so what I want you to do is call out. If you just read the book of Ruth, you know nothing else, you don't know the rest of the Bible, and P.S., if there are people here who are not that familiar with the Bible, fantastic, okay? We need you and we are going to depend on you to keep us honest. Because often we say, oh, this, and actually that didn't come from Ruth, it came from somewhere else. So you need to keep us honest and say, where did you see that in the book of Ruth? Okay, so please, please help us out if that's you. Okay, so you don't know anything else about the Bible. You know no other stories. You know nothing except you've just read the book of Ruth for the first time in your life. Okay. What might be some applications? Just call them out and these ladies are going to write them down. Anything you can think of. They can be ridiculous.
Loyalty.
Loyalty. Be loyal. Okay.
Redeemer.
There's Redeemer. Okay.
Her. What?
Okay. And keep in mind, these are applications. Okay. Not just what you see there, but how would you apply this to your life? Okay. No. You can take turns writing. What did somebody say?
Lie down at his feet.
Okay. Be what? Be willing to work hard. That girl worked hard. She's on her feet from that time in the morning until now. Brief rest in the shelter. Yeah. Oh, separate the wheat from the chaff. You don't have to both write all of these. You can take turns. That's why I have, because it's going to go fast. Okay, be humble. Trust people. Trust people or God or someone, yes.
Help neighbors.
Help neighbors. Okay. Okay, so maybe don't be afraid of the future. Is that fair enough? Don't be afraid of the future. Okay. Jared. Venture into the unknown. Ooh, I like it. Norma.
Be ready to do something really absurd.
Be ready to do something really absurd. That's where I live. All right. Okay, anything else?
Foreigners have a place.
Okay.
You
might not be single forever. Okay, there we go. How far love can take you. All right. Good. Okay. Excellent. Thank you. All right. Now, throughout the weekend, we are also going to kind of just keep touching base with the story of David and Goliath. David was Ruth's great-grandson. Okay. Everybody know the story of David and Goliath? Everybody good? Okay. Little kid. Israel's fighting the Philistines. The Philistines send out this giant who was, according to how you measure the cubit, probably either 7'9" or 9'9" in a day when people were probably not as tall as they are today. Philistines send out a Goliath. He says, I'll fight to represent my team. David is a kid. He ends up talking the king into letting him go represent the Israelites. Takes out a slingshot, puts a stone through the giant's forehead. Giant's dead. David wins the battle. Okay. How many of you have ever heard a sermon on the story of David and Goliath? Okay. If you have, what was the message? Or if you've heard a sermon on the radio or, you know, anything like that. Be like David. What'd you say? Fight over your fear. Faith over fear. Okay. God will use what you have. Okay. Kathy? Okay. Yep. God will help you defeat your giants. All that. Okay. Good. All right. It is true that we should have faith and we should overcome our fears, right? With God's help. That is true. We should read that in the rest of Scripture. Okay? And God may or may not help you defeat the particular giant you have in your life right now the way you are envisioning it. Hopefully he will. Okay? But neither of those things is the point of that story. So we will keep touching back to David and Goliath as we go through the weekend and say, okay, well, what was going on with Goliath? Okay? All right. I think you guys can sit down. Thank you. All right. Thank you. My mother was Scottish, and she made some really good shortbread, which was great. Further improved by the fact that my dad had a wicked sweet tooth, and so it got sweeter as we got older, and it was wonderful. But the thing about shortbread, and let me see if I can, I'll try to find a picture. The thing about shortbread, like many recipes, is you have to do it in stages. Okay, let me just see if I can find this picture. Okay, nope. Sorry, I was going to see. There we are. Okay, there are the ingredients for shortbread. You can leave out the almond extract if you don't like it. Okay, but if I just took these things in the right measure, dumped them in a pan and stuck it in the oven, that would not be shortbread when it came out. Okay, so you have... I have pictures of different stages, but it's going to take too long to open them. Right, so first you take the butter and sugar and you cream it together and until it turns into something sort of like a very soft Play-Doh. Then you cut in the flour, and then it becomes very, like, crumbly, so you're moving away from the Play-Doh. There you go. And then you work it with your hands until it turns back into Play-Doh. Then you put it in the pan. Sure, if there is one. Let's have the pregnant lady grab the table. anyway, then you kind of break it apart. There you go. Thank you. Did not anticipate needing that. Thank you very much. Anyway, then you break it apart and you put it in the pan so it's now come apart again. Then you mush it down until it's all together again, and then you put sugar on the top and you bake it. All right. And if you skip those steps and just say, this is good enough, whatever stage I've gotten to, and stick it in the oven, it's probably not going to turn out very well. The same is sort of true for applying Old Testament narratives, right? We have to go through stages. So hopefully, nope, I'm on the wrong end here. There we go. All right. Can you see that? So there are your steps. So here we go. Gather the ingredients. Read the book. You just saw it, so you're off the hook for that. Okay, cream the butter and sugar. Understand the background, the culture, the history, the situation of the characters as well as you can. Yep.
Thank you.
Better? Okay. Okay. And then there will be further stages. These first two are where we're going to spend this morning. Okay. And then there'll be further stages on beyond that. All right. Look at that. Got myself a blank screen. All right. So I could have the ladies come back up here and we could write on here, what did you notice about Ruth? Let's take 30 seconds. What struck you? We already said some of these things. Loyalty, there's a redeemer, hardworking woman, all those sorts of things. Okay. But what we're going to do for the rest of this session is work around trying to understand Ruth and Naomi and Boaz's situations as well as we can. And for that, we're going to need some familiarity with that background. Now, we'll talk later about how you can come by that for this morning. I'm just providing it. Okay? Now, if I said to you, or somebody said to you, here we are, I'm going to make these all bigger. Okay? Avoid 76 between 6 and 8 and 4 and 6. What would I be talking about? Schuylkill Expressway. Okay? We all know that, right? You live near Philly, and it's like, well, obviously, that's what that means. Okay? Now, if you said this to somebody in California, right, they would probably figure out 76 must be the name of a road, probably a highway. The other sets of numbers are rush hour. Like, I get this. If you said this to somebody who lives in the jungles of Borneo who has never seen a car in their lives, they would have no clue, right? There's so much you would have to explain about cars and highways and work schedules in the modern West and how the workday tends to run from this time to this time, and so everybody's going to work all the same time, and it gets backed up on the highway, blah, blah, blah. Okay? There's a lot you'd have to explain. What about if I said, stay away from the tall grass? Why might you need to stay away from the tall grass? Okay, yeah, somebody said snakes. So there are places in the country where it would be snakes, but where we live, it's ticks. Right? You stay away from the tall grass because you don't want to pick up ticks and get Lyme disease. Okay? It could mean other things in other parts of the world. Right? But the point is, it's context. It's what you're familiar with. So if you met somebody, let's say you went to sleep, cryo freeze, whatever they call that sci-fi stuff, and you woke up 3,000 years from now, and you're trying to tell people stories from your life, how well do you think that would go? Probably not very. Right? There would be so much you would have to explain to them that's true now, and we all get it just like this. You know, stay away from the tall grass means don't pick up ticks, and they would have no clue. Well, we are more than 3,000 years from the story of Ruth. So it's not surprising that there are tons of stuff in the story that people who originally read the book when it was first written would have completely just intuitively understood that we just scratch our heads and say, what was up? Like, why? What was going on? And why was this so important? So the point is, if we want to really understand what's going on in the story, we need to have some background information. All right, so here is what we're going to do. In the middle of your table, don't get them yet. Let me explain it first, and then you can take them out. Okay, you should have underneath the wheat things in the glass, you should have two things. The first is a set of papers that gives some just background of ancient Near Eastern society. And the second is a list of questions. So don't get distracted by those yet. Okay? What I would recommend, you're going to work at your table, and what I recommend is just pass out, not yet, pass out the information about the background, and just go around the table, everybody read a paragraph or something, so you've all heard it, this is information you're working with, okay? And then each table has a different set of questions. You have been assigned one character from one chapter, okay? And there are questions about that character in that chapter. And the deal here, don't get bogged down, this doesn't have to be perfect, I'm not collecting it, there's no grade, okay? What we're going to try to do is just, as much as possible, get into that character's situation and understand what was the significance of that? What were they facing here that we might not pick up on a first reading as 2026 Americans? Okay, I'm going to give you 15 minutes. Might give you a five-minute warning 10 minutes in. Okay, everybody understand what you're doing? Okay, you're going to take the off-white, the whatever you call that, camel color or something? You're going to take the ecru papers, right, pass them out, and then you can read them to yourself if you want to. I'd recommend reading them around the table, right? So then everybody has that background in their heads. After you finish that, you're going to take your white piece of paper. There should be one per person. The back two, those two tables back there are working on the same material, and those two tables back there are working on the same material. So you may not have eight copies. You probably only have four copies of the white question, so just share them. Okay? And what you're going to do is just, as quickly as you can, work through the questions and try to get a sense of what was this character facing at this point in the story. Make sense? Everybody good? Okay, go. All right. I am guessing that you didn't get through all your questions, which is totally fine. You may not have gotten started on your questions, which is also fine. Okay? But hopefully, even just, like you just had a, you know, probably a couple of seminary courses in four pages. And now go. So, but you may take those sheets home with you. The idea this weekend is also to just kind of give you resources. Bree will talk later about a folder of resources that will be available online after the retreat. Okay, so what we're going to do then is hear from tables. You have 1 minute. I've got my little timer here. Okay. Just give us a sense, as far as you got, of like what was character so-and-so facing at this point in the story. Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thank you, thank you. All right, you guys have done an awesome job. Even if you didn't have, I felt I didn't give you very much time. Okay? Yep, so I think you've probably hit all these things. I'll make that big. Here we go. Right, they're foreigners in Moab. They're at risk. So you've covered all these things. But I think just to get, where is this? Yeah, I think you tell me if it's true. Having read through the handout, having thought through the character situations, do you feel like you have a better sense of just how vulnerable and just how empty Ruth and Naomi were in chapter one? Right? It's. I mean, any of us would read the book and be, oh, that's really sad. She lost her husband and both her kids. That's really, really, like, that's genuinely sad. Move on. Okay? But when you have a sense of the background, it's like, oh, this was not just sad. This was life-threatening. And they were at distinct risk. They were in danger of all kinds of things, including starving and dying. And no future, no hope, as somebody said, right, past marriageable age. It's like this is a hopeless situation and there is no way out. And then you see what God did. And he did it through the choices that characters made, right? If Ruth had not gone with Naomi, this story would not have ended the way it did. And if Boaz had not been as kind and generous and full of steadfast love and faithfulness as he was, it also wouldn't have ended the way it did. And so you see how God is just taking things from emptiness and death to fullness and life, overflowing, spilling over us down, running over the top. And he did it sometimes without help, like he saw to it that she happened to end up in the fortunate fields that belonged to Boaz, but also through people's choice and agency. All right. Great. One thing I would want to know, let me take this down. Okay, is that in the Bible, the Old Testament, but even the New Testament, the way people told stories was different. Different cultures tell stories differently. And so I think if somebody were to write this story today, first of all, it would be much longer, right? It would have many more details. But some of those details would include how the characters felt, what they were dealing with. There would be lots of adjectives and adverbs, right? Just the anguish and the hopelessness and the despair and the wrestling with God and are you still there and do you still care and has your hand gone out against me and what are you doing? And the grief, just towering grief and fear. Like, this story would read very differently if it were written by a modern author, right? It's just not the way they told stories, which fine. And at the time, people would have gotten the import. Okay? When Elimelech died, they would have known instantly what that meant for Naomi and the boys. And when the boys died, everybody would have known immediately everything that we have just talked about. And so there I guess wasn't a need to talk about people's inner turmoil and so forth. But it's interesting that in the book of Ruth, in chapter 1, we get a little piece of that from Naomi. That's not characteristic of the way stories were told. But we get her perspective on just the hopelessness and feeling like God's hand has gone out against her and he has just made her life evil. I don't know how to translate that It's he has eviled me exceedingly. I mean, how do you translate that effectively, right? And so we get a glimpse, a little bit, just a little window into Naomi's internal world in that one part of the section, part of the story, chapter one. And that says something important to me, which is true in all the stories where you don't get the details, but that one stands out because we don't know who wrote the book of Ruth, but we know God did. And it says to me that he knows. I'm going to cry. I'm sorry. Didn't see that coming. Right? He actually knows the things that we're dealing with. And he cares. And he acts. And that is so precious to know that we have a God. Whatever we're dealing with. You know, probably everybody in this room is dealing with something or has a loved one who's dealing with something really hard. And maybe nobody else knows and nobody else understands. But God knows, and he cares. And that, I think, is really significant. Okay, we're just about to wrap up. So the point is, stage one is read the story. Stage two of making the shortbread or applying an Old Testament narrative is trying to understand what's going on as well as you can. Okay? And part of the question is, well, that's great, thank you very much, but how am I supposed to know these things? Okay? So I have a couple of suggestions. If you, number one, check a timeline. We have a lovely, our timeline is now a lovely white drape across the back of the stage. I hope you're enjoying that. Lots of blue. But you have a timeline. If you were not here last night, there are timelines available that you can pick. I'm not sure where they went to, but we'll get you one. So just say, where am I in the flow of this story? That can be helpful as a starter point. Now, if you are a go-getter, you have lots of time on your hands. I don't know anybody like that, but let's just say you had time on your hands and just a ton of interest, and this is what you want to look into. In the folder that will be available after the retreat is a page that just lists a whole bunch of suggested resources, books you can read. There's a proviso saying, I have not read most of these, so I can't vouch for them, but I understand they're good. Some of them I am familiar with. But anyway, you can look into this and find out lots more about the world of that time and daily life and roles of women and that sort of thing. If you are not in that category, right, one thing you can do is just pay attention as you're reading your Bible. And here is a tip. Anytime you're reading, especially in the Old Testament, and you run across something that you're like, wait, what? Okay, that's probably a clue. If nobody in the story seems to be flapped by that, that's probably something in the culture. So you could just make a mental note, keep a little list in your Bible of, well, apparently people did this back then. That seems weird to me, but there you are. Sometimes in the story there are clues that it was actually not okay, even in that culture. But if you run into those things, just pay attention to the stuff that seems weird or honestly sometimes even offensive. And it may have just been a piece of the culture. So that's another thing, right? And obviously the more you read your Bible, the more you run into these things. So just read, read, read. But even if you don't have time to read a lot of the Bible, just a little bit, just pay attention to those things. Your Bible may have a paragraph at the beginning of a book that tells you something about when it is set and kind of the theme of the book, maybe who wrote it, maybe what time period. If you have a study Bible, there are probably notes that can fill in some of these details. But if you don't have time for any of that at all, here is my suggestion. Resist the temptation to bring your 21st century lens to the text. Okay? Because how many times do you read a story and you're like, well, let me tell you. My husband came home and said that to me. Let me tell you what would happen. Okay? But probably in that culture, it was fine for a husband to come home and say whatever it was. Okay? Test case, how about Sarah saying, why don't you take my maid Hagar and have a child with her? And you're like, time out. Okay. Whoa. Stop. Okay. But actually, that was not an uncommon practice. And if you read ancient Near Eastern laws from countries around that part of the world at that time, there were laws governing those things because it happened because you need an heir. And if you can't have an heir with your wife, there are other ways legally to go about it. So just like we have, you know, there are laws that surround buying a car or leasing a car or renting a car, because those are things that happen and you need to have laws governing them. Apparently this was a common enough occurrence that there needed to be laws regulating when you had a child with a maidservant of your wife, what was the child's legal standing and whose child was it reckoned as and blah, blah, blah. So that seems like totally out of left field for us, but actually it was something that happened. It wasn't that uncommon back then. Here is a note. This is, I think, is important to say. There are things recorded in that are not the way God meant them to be. That's not a surprise to anybody, okay? But sometimes you will read stuff and you're just like, well, that's totally weird. I find it kind of offensive, but I guess it was just the culture, okay? Sometimes those things even fall within, you know, what looks like it's kind of under God's control. And you're like, okay, I have a problem with this. And I actually take comfort from Matthew 19:8, where Jesus said to them, he's talking about divorce, and he says, because of your hardness of heart, Moses allowed you to divorce your wife. But from the beginning, it was not so. So if you run into the law and you're like, okay, this, I've got a problem with that. Okay, we need to take the problem up with God. But it is possible that there are things that if you sat down with God, he would say, yeah, that is totally not at all the way I designed things to work in this world. And it's because of sin that entered. And, you know, apparently when it came to divorce, God made an accommodation because of the hardness of their heart. So I think it's important, especially when we're, especially as women, there are texts in the Old Testament about things that happen to women that are just really, really hard. And I think it's important to note that those things are probably not okay with God. So file that away as well. Okay? All right. Two quick pieces of homework. I'm a teacher. I have to give homework. You don't have to do it. It's not going to be collected. It's not going to be graded. But number one, if you have time between now and tonight, think about beyond what this table shared, which was great. Like, what does the book of Ruth tell me about God? Okay? So just muse on that if you have a time walking in the woods or something like that. And the other thing is, on the back table, as you have, there's a stack of 3x5 cards. You don't have to do this, but if you want to, you can. Pick up a card and just write down, what longing of the human heart do I hear in the book of Ruth? Okay? So, for instance, in the David and Goliath story, I would say, the longing of a people to be free and not under the thumb of an oppressive neighboring country. Okay? I feel like that's a longing of the human heart. So that kind of thing. Just as a human being in this world, the kinds of things we just long for deep down in our souls. And do you hear any of those in the book of Ruth? So if you do, you can grab a card, write it down, bring it back tonight. I will collect those after the evening session. Okay? All right. So we have done. Here we go. Where's my stages thing? There we go. We did gathering the ingredients and creaming the butter and sugar. All right. Tonight we will do the next three. Very good. All right. Thank you for sticking with this. Bree, I assume, will tell us all kinds of stuff. Thank you.